It's the fucking Aaron Water show.
Oh my God. All day.
Aaron Water show. All day yesterday, and all day tomorrow, and all day Sunday.
At least I'm a little inland. I cannot imagine how bad it is here on the lakeshore.
Oh, it's bad. It's bad. I actually think, I mean, it's not as bad because I've been living here in Chicago for 6 years. Hey, let's get our listeners up to date. The Aaron Water Show is a celebratory experience wherein people show up all across the lakeshore and jet planes, fighter planes, and all sorts of weapons of war dance across the sky in synchronized fashion, including like the Blue Angels and things like that.
Not very high up, we should say also.
No, pretty close to the ground, very loud. Sounds like we're being attacked every time. The buildings shake. There are rules in the skyline, in my high rise, that you cannot have glass on your balcony.
Really?
It's a real threat. It is actually a danger to the people of Chicago, and it's harmful towards veterans, I'm assuming, with PTSD. Probably don't want to hear fighter jets going over the sky. Sucks real bad for dog owners, I'm sure.
Why do we do this?
Because the United States government is a military-industrial complex that gets a lot of its funding from a very belligerent international policy.
That's a very coherent answer. You are 100% correct.
And that's why it's happening even in the face of all this war that's going on around us.
Yeah, not really feeling great about, like, you know, the fantasy of armed combat at the moment.
Not at all. But that's where we're at. This is a Chicago Aaron Water Show hate podcast.
Yes. We are fully anti.
Mm-hmm. Fully
Aaron
anti.
Water Show, you know, enjoyers, DNI.
If it's your bag, that I get it, because it's big machines that you don't otherwise see, and out of context it is neat, but in the context of everything else that came before us and all in which we live, it's
context,
pretty scary.
Even. Yeah.
It's pretty scary,
not good in context. Good thing we played a game we both enjoyed this week, right?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's a game that is going to be really fun to talk about for a very long time. Let's get started. We are a sad clown, and we are dreaming up a world, and it's exploding, and we... Oh, fuck this game.
Buzz, storm of buzz, and we're going to tell you about how we saved the world.
Hey, everyone.
Hello.
Welcome back. Welcome back to another episode of ASMR August. This is Storm Buds, and I am your Australian breakdancer of light, Jerome Barbonsis. And joined with me is my potted plant that will eat you alive of light.
What?
Alexander Hambrock.
What, just fucking Mean Green from Outer Space over here? That's what's going on?
Wow. Stop yelling at me. This is a relaxing month. And today we're going to talk about the Whispered World. Hey, Alexander.
Yes?
What's the Whispered World?
Okay, bit of a history lesson here. I actually think, look, I don't think we enjoyed this game. I do think it is kind of interesting as a historical artifact.
Mm.
The Whispered World is a point-and-click adventure game developed by Dead Lake Entertainment that came out in, I believe, 2008 or 2009. Okay, so this is almost 15 years old at this point, which is crazy to think about. But,
well, it's contemporary with Braid.
It is contemporary with Braid. That's true. Well, that's not a bad calibration point, actually.
Yeah.
Because, like, okay, this is a point-and-click adventure game. Think about brief history lesson in point-and-click adventure games,
hey,
right?
Hey, if you didn't listen to our Humongous Adventure, Humongous Entertainment episodes, now would be the time to do that.
I'm going
to
go, like, a little bit deeper for, like, 30 seconds, right? Because, okay, text adventure games are one of the earliest game genres to emerge. Like, Space Wars, your Pongs, and your Colossal Cave Adventures, right?
This is not a text adventure game. This is a fully animated point and click adventure game.
Yes, but those lead into the first wave of what we like think of as graphic adventure games, which then sort of like, you know, in the 80s and early 90s blow up into sort of your two classic families of point and click adventures, your Scum Engine ones like your Monkey Islands and your Maniac Mansions, and your Sierra ones like mm-hmm. all the King's Quest games, right?
Yeah.
And then kind of in the mid-90s, like traditional point-and-click adventure games is you walk around, you select verbs from a menu, you use item on item to get through door, etc. And then in like the early 90s...
This includes like Fallout as well.
Yeah, you could include Fallout.
Fallout has a lot of point-and-click adventure elements into it. There's a lot of items you do use with different verbs. And you have different verbs that you interact with people in. Some of those just happen to be steal or fight or whatever. And then there's the RPG layers. The RPG elements layered on top of that, and that's where Final Fantasy or things come in, where they sort of take a lot of that interactivity out of the exploration and they just replace it with an A button, and then the majority of the gameplay is in the combat. But go on.
Yes. Well, and then so in the early 90s, then Myst comes along and demolishes everything, right? The adventure game takes a hard pivot
The two genres at that point very much diverge.
Yes, exactly. And traditional point-and-click adventure games kind of fall off pretty hard for a while. Like, you get a couple more. You get your Grim Fandangos and stuff in, like, the late 90s. But by the early 2000s, the genre has completely fallen out of the mainstream, with the exception of like a handful of European studios that keep making games in this same sort of vein.
Would you consider The Walking Dead a point and click adventure game, or any Telltale game like that?
Not in this style is the difference, right? Okay. Because the European branch really goes hard down the direction of inventory puzzles, right?
Yes.
The game I kept thinking about while playing this was, I believe, The Longest Journey. Which, that's what it's called, right? Yes. The game I kept thinking about was The Longest Journey, which is it's in 2000 from a Danish studio, I want to say, or a Dutch studio. It's a lot of this, right? It is, you have access at any one given time to a handful of screens that are beautifully rendered. You have an assortment of completely random inventory items you've picked up from your environment, and you have a completely arbitrary puzzle in front of you in which you have to find some combination of those items mm-hmm. that fits together in some completely unintuitive way to activate some part of the world to advance to the next section, which is what this game is.
That is largely this game to a T. There's a lot to respect about the Whispered World, especially for its time. The hand animated stuff, all the characters and the drawn backgrounds are impressive, not exactly the most beautiful
but impressive
nonetheless. The level of detail that is in this world is above adequate. It would be a lot more interesting to navigate if the voice of the narrator were palatable in any sense of the word. Well, the story of this game, do we want to get into a little bit of the story of this game?
I think so. I got one little final point, which is just that, like, that this ends up being kind of like the Daedalic Entertainment games end up being kind of the culmination of this offshoot branch that goes so hard in the inventory puzzles, while the rest of the genre stagnates for a while and then begins coming back with stuff that is more experimental again, like The Walking Dead and the other Telltale games, or like the recent revivals like Thimbleweed Park and Monkey Island and stuff like that, right? Like, sort of like adventure games kind of take a break for a while and then get reinvented when they come back in like the last 6 or 7 years, except for these games, which are kind of humming along the whole time and just further and further cornered themselves into this very specific gameplay mode.
Yeah. So this game is centered around this clown named Sandwick, who is having this recurring dream of the world falling apart.
Yes.
And
he's like 10 years old, I believe. He's like a kid.
Yeah, he's a kid clown. He's got this blue skin, droopy everything, and he's part of a traveling troupe of clowns, and I can't even do his voice. I think I've already blocked it out. I played this game today just to like get a little bit more, and I tried it. This voice is,
go look at this, I can't leave the door yet. What's this note that the skull has for me?
I don't ever want to slight a voice actor or their work, anything like that. I don't think that The actor did a bad job. I don't think that the line reads of this character are bad. I don't know that the things he says are I don't think the writing is particularly bad. It is just too much of this.
Might say the writing is bad, okay. But that's me.
I was kind of coming at this that like this is kind of a baby game for babies.
But it's not of, because it's fucking impossible to play.
That is exactly where I was going. But narratively, it is a baby game for babies. It is kind of a game that I was like, oh, maybe a parent would really enjoy this for their kids. And then you get to one of these form mechanics that help you unlock everything. And then there's this long list of items that gets put in your inventory that you have to combine in weird ways that are just, as you mentioned, completely inscrutable. A baby would not be interested anymore. And it is just too much. It's too much sugar is what this game is. It's really too much. It's something that is overly sweet and saccharine. It's like one of those, it's like a muffin that's substituting sugar for like agave nectar and xanthan gum and stuff. It's like, it's off. Everything is just off to me.
Well, yeah, because especially like it's sweet, except for Sadwick himself, who is just constantly like sarcastic and acerbic and like depressed about everything, and just treats every character with this level of like sort of like low level hostility.
I didn't mean sweet in that it's like the game content itself is sweet, but more like it is too much of one note of flavor.
Yes,
it is overbearing in a lot of ways, and that is why neither of us got very far into this 4-hour game.
I mean,
it's only 4 hours, and then I tried to just listen to a playthrough of it during work. That was a bad idea. It's such an arrestingly upsetting experience.
I mean, it's got cool stuff in it, like a lot of hand-drawn animation, even if it's low frame rate. Like like the backgrounds are fairly pretty, but it's just like the main character is insufferable, and the puzzles are impossible. I don't know how you would solve these.
They're absolutely the most esoteric variety of puzzles.
And in particular, like the real problem with them is that a lot of times it is not even clear what you are supposed to do.
Yeah.
It's one thing if it's like, oh, okay, my objective is this next thing. I need to activate it in some way. Let me figure out what I can do with my items. That's one thing, but there's so little direction in this game. I don't even know how you would identify like where you should be looking next.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. If you think about a game like Monkey Island, even though you have a bunch of rooms and stuff you can explore on this map, the game does a really good job with its dialogue, with its variety of characters, and with its hints to, with its in-game sort of hints and directionality to lead the people that are playing this game along the way. And I think they skipped that step.
Yes, 100%.
I'm out of ideas to talk about. I don't want to rag on this game too long because it's kind of it's still an underdog. I really wanted to give this a shot in an audience to see if it was pretty good. It didn't have terrible reviews, but I don't think it's for me. I will say what was there was a couple funny things specifically about this game. One is that terrible worm friend.
Yeah.
The terrible worm friend that Sadwick has that's just like a sideways stack of pancakes that's super weird and funny. I love him. I love that guy.
Did you meet the rocks?
No, not yet.
Oh, there's two rock characters who show up in one scene who genuinely were very funny and made me laugh out loud a lot.
Yeah, there's, I imagine that. I got the special edition with the developer's commentary, and I didn't realize that was what was happening. And then early game, I was like, why is there just a dude, the drawn dude in the top left, and I clicked it, and they spoke so much German. There was so much commentary about this, and I didn't understand any of it. I mean, it was translated in English, but I wasn't going to wait for it. And I was just like, so I was like, okay, I'm trying to click through, and it just kept going. There was more and more German, and I was just like, all right, I'm done, bye, please, how do I say, juice, let me out.
In diesem Spiel, we have Sadwick und...
Oh, Christ. There's, again, aesthetically, it's interesting. not for me.
I will say this did make me want to at some point do like some more classic adventure games.
Oh, for sure.
We could go in two
Doing one next week.
That's true. I was just like we could go in two different directions with it. I would like at some point to do like one or more of the Amanita Design games. They do Machinarium, Botanicula, the Samorast games.
Okay.
Very cute, aesthetically like fun little puzzle objects. Or at some point it would be great to do the King's Quest revival that came out about a decade ago.
I forgot about that. That's right.
That game, I only played the first two chapters of it, but I really liked what I played.
Cool. Maybe.
Okay. Anyway, that's the Whispered World.
That's really it. I know we're already 15 minutes in, so we realized that I realized as soon as I started, I was like, there's not going to be a whole lot to talk about here, but I do have a lot to talk about in terms of side quests.
Yeah,
we haven't done this in a while, so let's get some out of the way while we have a light workload. I've got a couple things going for me. Both of them are Riot games. One of which is the latest TFT set. That's been a lot of fun. I've been climbing and struggling and screaming at it, but I've otherwise been enjoying it and talking about it with and streaming it on my personal Twitch, twitch.tv/JeromeBarbatsis. It's just my name. I figured, you know what? It's my name. No one else can have it. I'll never worry about it being unique, and my digital footprint is already ruined. If not by this podcast, then by my TikTok. It's a lot of fun. It's witches themed. It's like witch themed and witch and magic themed, and it's nice to have something about that, something in that vein that doesn't want to kill trans women. So I really have been enjoying this set a lot, and I've also been invited to the 2XKO Alpha.
Yes.
This is the Riot Games fighting game. I do have I have a friend that works at Riot, obviously, so I got connected. But I will stake my claim here. I've been interested in this game for a while because I like fighting games, and I provided some feedback a while ago with him and another developer, and then like we saw immediate changes with that feedback for within like I saw something that was very wrong with one of the characters, and then they made. Like the person that was like in charge of this reached out to me on Discord via this guy, via my friend. And then they listened to my feedback and made the change within the next promotional material for that character. And it was so fucking cool.
Oh,
to
right.
See.
Yeah.
I don't want to like get too specific about the changes because like glasses push or like, you know, it may be it's already fixed at this point. So like, what's the point of pretending of like bringing it up, right? I don't want to get them in like hot water for being like, you know, like, oh, they didn't do this right the first time and whatever. Like, no, I want to just celebrate that Riot listened to my feedback and made a change pretty immediately directly. So I'm like really interested in this game, and you guys should be too, because it's a lot of fun. It is a mix up between Guilty Gear Strive and I would guess any Tag Fighter. Like 2D Tag Fighter as well.
Like MVC?
Sure, yeah. It has the assist system, which also functions as kind of the Guilty Gear Burst system, where you have like an emergency get out and stuff. And there's also a similar vibe. There's a similar mode to Street Fighter's Modern Controls as well, where you can just kind of hit the same buttons over and over again to do a combo. And then once you get familiar with the character, you can turn on the expert or freestyle modes and learn the controls that way if you want to do that. But it's super easy to just jump in. I was playing some games earlier and Alex was immediately invested in what was going on.
I was like, you're throwing cookies? Oh my God, look at those dogs.
those are Poros. They're little tiny Yetis. They're little, but they swarmed to make a big ball and they killed the time traveling kid. So it's a lot of fun thus far. I might toss up my stream this weekend as well to get more people. I test streamed it like at 11 last night. No one was on, but I just wanted to test streaming it, and it ran pretty beautifully.
I would hope that
upload rate. No, I listen, Riot and League of Legends, the League of Legends client is still it's a legacy, not worth, as far as I understand it, not worth their investment to actually fix. So streaming that is not always easy, but this is a newer game, and it was pretty easy to set up and capture and display for everyone. However, I'm really bad at streaming fighting games because, like, I get too intense. I can't think of words to say. Like, even when I'm really comfortable with the character, I'm still just, like, in the match, you know? Whereas if I'm streaming something that's, like a Fallout or an open world game or a strategy game, I can much more easily vocalize my thoughts and what I'm thinking about doing or the bits that I'm doing or whatever. So those are my side quests. I've been having a lot of fun in Riot Land, and I would hope you guys have been too. Let me know in the Discord link in the description if you're interested in either of those things, and we could talk about them.
For my part, I have still been working on playing through the Riven remake that came out about a month ago.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, like, I have really mixed feelings about. It's very interesting. Mm. So, unlike the Myst remake, which I did not particularly like because I think they didn't do a good job of capturing some of, like, you know, what was aesthetically interesting about Myst that came out, like, a year ago or whatever.
Yeah.
The Riven remake, on the aesthetic front, is absolutely gorgeous. It is an effective remake of one of the most, like, visually striking and aurally unusual games that I think has ever been made. Like, Riven is really looks like nothing else out there and sounds like nothing else out there. And this remake, which takes it from a bunch of pre-rendered kind of, like, slides, almost like an interactive PowerPoint, it is actually been converted into a fully, like, 3D world that you could walk around and, like, and it looks just like it. Like, the graphics have come far enough. These pre-rendered backgrounds now can be realized as an actual location that you can inhabit, and the soundtrack is still absolutely incredible, and it's just great to spend time in this world. But I read some reviews that said, oh, they've changed a few of the puzzles. And I was like, that's interesting. Give you, like, a different sort of, like, you know, way to approach it if you're familiar with the game. Like, I am. I can play Riven in my sleep. They have not just changed a couple of puzzles. They have, like, restructured the entire game. Oh. There are whole sections of it that, like, are inaccessible or that are accessible in different orders. There are, like, you know, like, just bits of it that you can't do or can do earlier. And several of the puzzles have been completely reimagined. Like, straight up just, like, whole, like, the way that they work has been pulled out and then rebuilt as some different thing and then put back in. And on the one hand, it's not like the stuff they've replaced it with is bad exactly. I have a few complaints about the linearity. I think they took some of the non-linearity of the original Riven and kind of, like, funnel you down one critical path a bit more explicitly this time around, which I'm not thrilled about. But the puzzles themselves are fine. Mm. It's more that just, like, it's not really a remake then. And I think that the original Riven is so incredibly tightly designed that I keep going back and forth and if I think this is actually necessary or not. There's a part of me that would have preferred it if they had just done, like, a one-to-one remake of the original but in this new graphical style and, like, you know, and let us sort of, like, you know, let the thing exist as itself. And the other part of me is like, but also it's not a big deal that they updated it. I don't know. I think I'd feel more strongly about this if the original Riven was harder to play. As it is, I still think the game is very playable. It still looks fairly good if a bit low res, and it's not difficult to get running or anything. Mm. But just, I did not expect the degree to which they have modified big chunks of this game.
Oh, okay.
Also, I'm sorry, Cyan as a studio, they don't have the biggest budgets anymore.
Yeah.
They can put money into rendering the environments and they look amazing. They cannot render people.
Oh,
and the
no.
problem is that the original Myst and the original Riven were some of the, like, great FMV games with actual actors standing in front of green screens. And in these remakes, they're, like, just bad polygon CGI people who kind of flail at you while they deliver their lines. And it's like, look, I get that those original videos were shot in, like, 320 by 280 resolution, and there's no way to upscale them, but it's just disappointing to have to replace them with these polygon models.
Yeah, well, that's unfortunate. But they're all dead now.
They are all dead now, yes, that's right. Everyone who worked in the original...
Riven came out 60 years ago.
And everyone who worked in it did die in that plane crash.
Oh, gosh. Oh, yeah, that, and thus we got lost. So, I guess that's going to do it. Did you get anything else done this week? Literally nothing. Literally empty. Empty programming for us. Okay, that concludes our discussion and our side quests around the Whispering World. We are going to go take two shots of vodka, and we will be right back after the ad break.
He's kind of not joking about this one.
We're gonna read some ads.
Hey, Alex.
Yeah?
How excited are you from the Air and Water show?
I'm absolutely hyped through the roof. I'm vibrating with energy.
Does it make you want to go on an adventure?
I always want to go on an adventure, but especially now.
Well, wouldn't you like it if you knew then you were certified that you were more prepared for adventure out in the water?
Like officially? Like with like a paper and everything?
Absolutely. That's why WeatherHelp, the online scuba resource, is offering a discount for its services for the Chicago Air and Water Show. And now it comes with a matchmaking system tailor-made for you to meet the perfect instructor. You can use WeatherHelp to improve your scuba skills from the comfort of your own home. If you remember, this is the pandemic-induced Zoom scuba sessions that instructors will give you a list of gear that you have to pay out of pocket for, and then you can practice your scuba diving in the comfort of your own tub.
So I do have a question about this.
Yes.
So I'm doing it from home, obviously, but like, are they training me to dive in like Michigan or like the ocean? Or
they're training you to dive in whatever body of water you can set your Zoom background to. So we had WeatherHelp recently had heard had feedback about certain scuba instructors propositioning their clients for sexual favors. So they decided,
I did hear about that scandal.
They did decide to give people an opportunity to be honest and open about what they're using WeatherHelp for. With WeatherHelp's new matchmaking system and profile options, you can be sure that your scuba diver instructor will know what your name is, where you work, and what your sun sign is.
Wow, this sounds incredibly healthy.
You will also have the space to talk about how your ex-scuba diving instructor traumatized you by begging you to be his piss slave and refusing sexual favors of any favor, any time, any kind at all, or attention for months until you finally relent to become his piss slave in the tub. We now have a specific piss slave section in our application for WeatherHelp so that you can get pissed and with or without consent to your heart's desire.
Boy, sounds like Neil Gaiman needs to sign up for this app, huh?
Oh, wow. Yeah, he's one of our most senior diving scuba instructors at WeatherHelp.
That makes absolute sense.
Yeah. And listen, we're open-minded here. Are you into the idea of having multiple scuba instructors at once?
The app has a setting for that?
Yes. You can pay a premium for PolyScube, our ethically non-monoscubamous instructor.
You got this.
Our ethically non-monoscubamous instructor program, where multiple scuba instructors will give you lots of valuable diving feedback all over you.
What if I want to get multiple scuba instructors instructing me at the same time?
Oh, absolutely. They can instruct you from both ends.
That sounds incredibly efficient.
It's very efficient. So sign up for WeatherHelp today. Get yourself wetter with more help.
Great.
Well, we had our two shots of vodka and we are perfectly fine.
Why are you lying to the folks? It's mezcal.
Hey, so is it okay if I play, if I set to repeat one, Katie Lang's Constant Changes?
Womp womp. You guys, you know I meant Constant Cravings, right? Please, God, please don't take my queer card away. Womp womp.
Do it.
Because that is exactly how I feel right now, after a perfectly normal two shots of vodka.
Do it. I'm not joking. Do it right now.
Okay. Well, we don't have the rights for it, but you guys at home will have to hear.
Who's fucking listening to this? Come on, put it on.
Robots. People don't listen to this. They scan everything.
Okay.
You know that's how it works. You 100% know that's how it works. But just imagine that Katie Lang, you know, actually you guys can do it yourself. Put on Katie Lang's Constant Changes at 95% volume on your device now while you listen to the rest of this episode. Because we are going to be talking about how the world is constantly changing, and so is our dog in Secret of Evermore.
Ah, good
what
bridge.
What a fucking transition.
Did you have that planned from the start?
Not one bit. I'm really proud of that one. We're going to talk about the second act of Secret of Evermore, Nobilia. Frankly, I was too focused on Riot Games. I made it through the first 75% of Nobilia, but I will play the rest of, I don't know, probably the entire game tonight because I was really into it this morning. I'm like, fuck, I can't put this
I'm
down.
In this game at this point. This is fun.
This game is so good. Okay, good. I'm happy, but like, it's not perfect. It's up against, it's still contemporaneous with some of the all-timers, and it has its omissions and flaws, but it is the second act of this game is really excellent. Where we left off, we were tossed ashore from an exploding volcano, and we were separated from our dog, and we ended up in this hollowed out pirate ship town called Crustacea.
We sure did.
Then we got a warning from one person there who said, like, hey, the pirates here are a pretty good time, but the people across the river, they're looking for the treasure. They're gonna beat you up.
Treasure?
So we go the other way, and the people there beat us up too.
They beat us everywhere.
This is bullshit. We were lied to. We didn't have to go across the river. But no, we run into Blimp as well, who was in the swamp and also had to come out from, what did he say? He like rode the back of the fucking dead sea snake or something that we killed.
Something like that. Who knows? He's here too.
He had a funny excuse, and we were like, we made a B movie reference, and he was like, oh yes, okay. And I want to say at this point, like, the more people just go, all right. I think the more, if you are playing along this game, the more me you start to see coming out of it.
That's very true. This it's very game influential is, on you.
This game was, is the progenitor for my very, all right, kind of sense of humor. But there's a certain slapstick element and a lot of callbacks that come back that are really... really fucking stupid. Things that go on for just a little bit too long, like this desert segment.
Yeah, no, it's great. I love it.
It's so funny, but like I've played this game over 10 times, at least 14 or whatever. Every time I get into this desert, I'm like, is it looping? Am I going crazy?
This game keeps having these little fuck you moments that I can't help but respect, where I'm just like, oh, someone did this to just be mean, and it's really funny.
Yeah, you go, there's this desert that's between Crustacea and Nobilia, the town where we're headed to, where Blip directs us to maybe try and find our dog. And it's a long desert. There, you're taking damage over time from the sand. There are those fucking spiders from Act 1 again that'll poison you.
And the fucking tumbleweeds.
And then tumbleweeds that just zone in on you and you can't even retaliate. They just like go away afterwards. And they're just knocking you around. They do offer you some grace with some oases scattered about the desert that fully heal you.
One of which has my favorite spell in the game so far.
Oh, I'm so glad you found Sting!
I love it!
Sting rules!
It's
also
so good.
One of my favorite spells. It's very powerful against monsters that are weak to magic, and it also keeps a lot of people in place, and it's pretty inexpensive.
Now, Jerome, you hear Sting, you might imagine what? Is someone like a giant hornet stinger that stings the enemy?
No, I think of a desert rose.
Well, what it appears to
I dream of rain.
What it actually appears to do is rain bees on the enemy.
It's fucking incredible. It's like acid rain, but bees.
Anyway, you make it to the top of the desert eventually.
You also get a fist formula.
Yeah, you do. You do get crushed.
That one's not very good. There's a couple reasons that one's not very good. One is it uses weird ingredients that like you can't. I know that you can't buy later, and it doesn't do that much damage, but it does summon a giant fist. That's funny. One playthrough,
down.
I leveled it up, and then I was like, God, what the fuck? I can't cast this spell anymore. I can't buy limestone anywhere.
I'm going to give up on using Crush now.
Yeah, there's also a much better fast spell option that you get very soon. But anyway, you make it up to Nobilia, and one of my favorite but the most controversial segments of this game begins.
Oh, no, I love the marketplace.
This is the Nobilia marketplace, and let me tell you what you're supposed to do. Let me give you the rundown, okay? You're supposed to leave Nobilia and go to the left, where there's a completely unmarked whirlpool that you can stand in, and your character will start, your boy will start to just automatically on his own spin in a circle. And if you do that for about 5 minutes and you see, do that for like a little bit too long, you get sucked into the ground after a few dialogue options, and then you move a little bit and you are given 99 rice and 99 beets.
Oh my God, that would have been so helpful.
But why would you know about it unless you just happen to go to the right and you're like, why is this segment of sand just like spinning me around in a circle? That's
okay.
Weird. I'm going to sit in it for 5 minutes.
So my experience upon arriving at the marketplace was There's, upon grasping what it is, or what it appears to be, right?
And what it is is there's a series of NPCs that all have various goods and services. Not even services. There's an appraiser. There's a service. Goods and services that you can exchange some of your money for. And speaking of exchange, this site doesn't use the same currency as Prehistoria.
Well, not only
isn't
that.
Isn't that fucking cool? It's like pointless, but it's like, okay, yeah, anyone can exchange currency.
It's not even, you can't even buy a jade disc. You're like, you want a jade disc? I'll trade it to you for three beads and two tapestries
and
like
a chicken.
Two tapestries.
Like, where the fuck do I get tapestries? Like
four chickens.
I'll give you a tapestry for a souvenir spoon and some incense. What the fuck? Where is that guy?
So it's this big, complicated trading marketplace. And also, and this is where I got. When you arrive, they're like, "We're closing in 15 minutes," and I was like, "Oh shit!"
I just spent the past 7 minutes. Making a spreadsheet of all these things.
Well, I did, because I hit pause and then went and pulled up a guide and meticulously planned out all the stuff I wanted to get. I didn't know you could come back. I thought it was going to shut down forever. And like, and after, like, you had your one chance to do it, and then you were going to miss everything.
Well, once you do everything, you do get quite a few excellent charms.
You really do.
The charm system we didn't even talk about last episode. There's a little purple pouch you have in your inventory, and charms go in there. They contain passive effects like, for instance, reduced chance to miss on your attacks, increased dodge chance. Did you get the chocobo egg?
I did not get the chocobo egg.
You can still, I mean, if you're still in Nobilia, you can get it.
I am not.
Actually, I think you might be able to get it in the next zone. Maybe. I don't know. I've never do it because the chocobo egg increases your and your dog's HP by 50.
Whoa. But what?
But the chocobo egg is a secret item that you can get by buying ceramic pots, and it has like a small percentage to be in one of the pots that when you buy it. So once you get everything unlocked, and there's a couple other secret things. You can loop around, right? You can buy bags of rice for jewels, and then you, or is it jewels? Yeah, jewels. And then you take those bags of rice, you buy the ceramic pots, and then you hope to pull the egg. If you don't get the egg, you go appraise the pots at the appraiser in the south, and then they appraise them for more than the bags of rice were worth. So you end up actually getting like infinite money out of it for as long as you want. Obviously, the game already has infinite money. It's not a big deal. But like, you can just keep doing that until you get the chocobo. You don't have to like leave and go kill some spiders and come back, which is which is really smart, because like, they recognize people could just leave and go kill some spiders and come back. So they're like, well, why don't I just take out some of the middleman of this here? Even though this is still a lot of running back and forth between the beads vendor and the rice vendor at the start.
I thought I totally exploited this game, but it turns out I missed out on the chocobo egg and infinite money.
Did you also get the silver sheath?
I did get the silver sheath.
Did you trade the silver sheath for the armor?
Yes.
Good. Because the silver sheath is broken.
Oh, the wiki told me.
Yeah. I did look that up. If you get it and then get it away, you still have the silver sheath power, which is awesome. So you did everything. You did the doomsayer.
Yes.
Okay, so there's a doomsayer in town, and if you talk to him enough, he'll start to break the fourth wall and be like, everything,
we're in a video game.
Which is very funny. Lots of it's a Deadpool-esque sort of moment. And if you choose to ignore the voice of God and not punish him by backing out of the menu, it gives you really good armor. Did you happen to talk to a chicken?
I did not talk to a chicken.
Didn't happen to talk to a chicken, nor talk to a chicken 200 times?
No, I did not. What happens if you do?
Well, maybe you'll have a chance to do that later and find out for yourself.
Okay.
I'll just leave that as a gift for you for later.
Next time I see a chicken, I will talk to it 200 times.
I don't know if it's actually 200, but it's a lot.
Does it do the Zelda thing where they all fly across the screen and like attack everyone?
You'll see. Okay. Moving on from the market, we get conscripted by our dog, who washed up in a fountain into the Nobilia Palace. And if you talk to people that are staff in the Nobilia Palace, they talk to the dog like he's a human person, and it's very funny. me and my wife work here. We keep the palace clean. And you're just like, I'm a dog. Yeah, you zoom in, and your dog just happens to look like a sacred figure, so that when they call people into town, they say, "Hey, we found God, and God's gonna pick somebody to fight in the Colosseum." And of course, God is our dog, and is like
runs to you,
runs directly to us. I was like, "God damn it!"
So we got to fight Vigor in the Colosseum.
Yes, this fight has helped a lot. If you have the Sting formula, but you can't buy it, you can't cast it yet because you don't have Vinegar.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
However, if you have Acid Rain, what you can do, the gimmick is Vigor is in a chariot, but he can only get hit from behind for a lot of damage. So what I do is I cast Acid Rain on him to keep him in place, and then I charge up a spear shot.
I just got good at moving out of the way and hitting
him. Yeah, it's not hard, but I was just like, oh, I'm going to make this take 2 seconds.
Anyway.
Did you notice in the audience there were some cameos?
No, I didn't. Who's in the audience?
From a little game called Final Fantasy VI. There is Locke, Terra, Mog.
Really?
Shadow, the ninja, and tell me if you vaguely recognize these characters, Strago, the Blue Mage, and Realm. Realm, the Pictomancer.
That's so weird.
Which is like, okay, Squaresoft, why not? I also thought, I saw Ness from Earthbound in the top left. Maybe.
It might just be a dude.
No, like the rest of the dudes are like semi-reasonable looking sprites, but then there was just like a stop sign with 2 dots. And I was like, what the fuck is that Ness? Like, that's what he looks like. So anyway, like, yeah, God, this game's just full of fun. You beat the guy and we are tasked with finding the Diamond Eyes, and we run across the river, and meet Horatio. Horatio is another member of Podunk who is a black man.
Yeah.
In 1996, who's a very smart man, but not a troubled genius.
No.
Who's not a fucking trope.
Just an archaeologist.
Just a dude
cool
who is
archaeologist.
Fucking sick-ass archaeologist dude with a sick-ass theme.
It's pretty good.
All of the Podunk.
Music continues to be good.
Dude, all of the Podunk civilians have excellent themes. I cannot wait for you to hear Blue Garden's theme. That was a brain chemistry-altering theme for me. Anyway, so he could, and I could say that because Horace tells us about the experiment. She said there was one more person there, Camilla Bluegarden, the librarian.
Yes.
Anyway, there are 2 temples in this zone at this point.
We get the eyes, right? We gotta get the sacred eyes.
And we get the revealer formula, which is really fun because, like, if you try to explore anywhere outside of the temple, did you fall in any of the pits?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's how you get dragged to camp. But if you can also just walk up to Horace's camp, but like, of course I'm gonna go in the pits. But if you know where the bridges are, you can just walk past them.
Yeah, I figured
it's
that
so
out eventually.
Cool. It's very cool. It's like, okay, if you know this, but like, I don't, then again, it's nice to have the formula. You're gonna need to talk to Horatio anyway and get the formula. And then we get taken to Hall of Colossia, which also has a sick ass fucking theme song.
Yeah, so we're doing Hall of Colossia first?
Yes, that's what I always
do. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Because I always, because I talk to, what's his name? Maldor, something, the alchemist.
I did.
And he talked to him and he's like, hey, my brother's in the walls.
I did find, well, I'll say this. I did find this one a little annoying, or more specifically, I found the rats annoying.
Oh, the rats are super annoying, yeah, but like,
that's why I started just like spamming spells at this point.
I let my dog take care of him. He's like, pretty good at it.
The actual problem is that I started getting behind on leveling my weapons because all the enemies were so annoying to fight.
You start getting more and more weapons because you get like 1 weapon per dungeon.
Yeah, and I was like, well, I'm not even leveled up on the previous one yet.
Just pick one and keep going, right? This game's not that hard. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Plus your dog's weapon is fully maxed. At all times at this point, probably.
That's true. Maybe I'll just like I'll get the sword in the next region.
He's the magician and the dog is the warrior and we're the mage, basically.
Sure.
I always go there because I want the fireball spell real bad. Did you get the fireball spell? It's in the temple, right?
I got fireball.
Yeah. That's a weird one. I always kind of forget where it is, but I'm like, okay, I know it's in the wall somewhere. And I'm like, oh yeah, it's in this like skinny wall that you're not expecting a secret to be in. But because they tell you that, you find all the other secrets in the Hall of Colossia at the same time. And you're like, oh, sick. I get all this like free honey and all this brimstone. What the fuck is this? Are we in hell? Why is there brimstone?
I haven't thought about that. Brimstone's a real thing, right? Does that exist?
I don't remember. Well, I mean, half of the alchemy shit's not real, right?
I guess. Like, what is
brimstone?
You
get a bunch of call beads and stuff. You get Horatio's call bead formulas. And they're fucking sick as well. Use your call beads. You know, you only get so many of them. But like,
brimstone is an alternative name for sulfur.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Which is also
very... Oh, God, so we just reek. This kid reeks, by the way.
Rotten eggs.
He's got, like, roots, oil, brimstone, just a fucking... I don't know, what's next? Lye? But yeah, the Hall of Kalosha fight's pretty cool. The there's all these people that are just like living in these dungeons too that are really funny that are just like, hey, I live here. Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
You want to save? Sure. All right. Bye. But yeah, what else did you think about like the Hall of Kalosha in general, puzzle wise?
There's
a couple.
Definitely the most complicated so far.
So far, and also the most frustrating, in my opinion.
I would agree with that. Like I did the pyramid first and found the pyramid actually quite a bit easier.
Yeah, the pyramid's fun.
Yeah, this one, there were a few moments where I were like, just like, a lot of stuff looks very similar, so it became easy to get kind of turned around.
Mm-hmm.
Or like figure out,
it's
like
a maze, but...
Or like, activate that lever and then rush back here to cross over this bridge before
thank
it disappears.
God, we both got that speed formula. Because
oh my God.
And then you like run into things that knock you back and you're like, fuck.
You know what I realized halfway through this dungeon? I had forgotten up until this point that this game has a run button. So I've just been walking everywhere.
How did you get past the whirlpools? In fucking act one.
No, I think I ran past them
and then forgot. Okay.
Until I got to the collapsing bridge.
I don't think you can.
I got to the collapsing. I got to the collapsing bridge in this dungeon and just kept trying to like. I even activated the speed formula. Yeah. It was like, I got speed formula on. Why can't I cross the bridge? Why can't I cross the bridge? And I was like, oh.
So you just walked across the desert?
Yes.
It's walked. So long. That's so funny.
I walked across that fucking desert.
Poor thing. You were just like diagonal walking because it's faster to diagonal
walk. I did catch on to that. I did diagonal walk. Whatever. I had a podcast.
Yeah. Well, okay, that's good. This is a great, it's a great podcast game.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that it's not exciting or not fun to play, but it's just ambient noise. You're not, again, bombarded with stuff. You can listen to other stuff and progress in this game and then turn your podcast off when things are happening. It's great.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
There's not much to talk about boss fight wise, but the fireball spell, very cool, good to get. Bronze spear, very cool. Good thing you were following a walkthrough, because I remember as a kid not really understanding how I'm supposed to know to throw the spear at those switches from afar.
That was
like, why
was
like, why can't
on.
I throw my other spear? Why? Mm-hmm. No, it had to be the bronze one. And then I thought like, oh, I have to level this up to level one, which you don't have to do.
No, you just got
to
get near. Like, yeah, it's really not intuitive that you stand in the right spot and you just throw it automatically.
That's one of the things about this game. It really does its best to try to lead you to solutions without telling you to press the A button to do them. And most of the time it's successful. I think in this dungeon it doesn't, but it's made up for by the two fucking stellar themes, the 7/8 ass woodwind runs that are playing through this. What the fuck, Jeremy Soule? Another banger from Jeremy Soule at the age of whatever the hell he was, 17, 18. I always forget.
Christ.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He was very young. It's like he just learned the 7/8 time signature and he's like, I'm gonna put this in a video game. Good for him. The pyramid is the other dungeon. Pretty cool. This is the first dungeon where we are separated from our dog by design, where the dog has to activate switches and we go around trying to dodge some fucking flying bones.
Fuck the flying bones. Again, just magic, magic, magic all the way
through. Oh my God, yes.
But also, like,
and
I mean,
if you get the formula first, you can buy the ingredients for Fireball from the camp and then stock up on those and then just magic all the fucking birds down.
But also, like, it's usually fun when you got two characters and you got like switch between them so that they can like go back and forth activating different
and
things.
It's not like you lose out on experience for your dog because he's in the same floor most of the time, like some of them, but like he's there with you. He's gonna fall behind a little bit no matter what, but it's a good time. Lots of hot dudes the hot dudes with the animal heads. Very like, this is sort of a melange of like it's so like, yeah, the point of this, right, Nobilia, is that it is early civilizations,
so you got
sort of the museum, like if you go to the art the CIA, right, and you go down the Mediterranean and Egyptian wing in the Bronze and Iron Age, just the Bronze Age,
yeah, like Greek,
classical
Egyptian
mythology stuff,
all that sort of stuff.
You're getting sort of a museum like experience, a tour of a pyramid and a tour of a Parthenon, basically, which to me as a little Greek boy, hell yeah.
Yeah, into it.
Super rad. Super awesome. Love this guy. And I love this place. But the pyramid, this is where I stopped playing, but I can keep talking about this game, obviously, because I found the guy in the corner and saved. And I was like, okay, I need to prep for the podcast.
Yeah, at the top, you fight one of my favorite boss type archetypes. I love an evil statue.
Spinning, yep, the spinning top. Spinning top, evil statue. Pain in the ass to hit, but good thing we have magic, and also just good dog. Again, this dog, excellent AI.
Yeah.
For the most part, apart from when he wastes his charged attack on a monster that's locked in a spell, and you're like, all right, well, what can you do about that?
I think kind of a boss rush from here to the end, because like after you finish whatever the most final boss is, then you've got two more boss fights.
You get the Aegis statue. Turns out there's another robot clone of Horus, who was the evil, talking something about cleanliness. Did you pick up on that? He's like, oh yes, your cleanliness.
Yeah.
It was interesting. An interesting take, an interesting sort of presentation of the main villain. Of this game.
Boy, I sure hope the next time our character meets someone who seems friendly but wants something from us, we don't immediately hand them the stuff again.
Yeah, but we do hand the robot twin, because we're like, oh, Horus, you changed into a dark green outfit. That's weird. Anyway, here's the MacGuffins.
Also, you're left-handed now.
Yeah. And you're Asian? All right, whatever, Horus. Go off. So we head back to town. They put the dog eyes in the statue. The statue comes to life. No, yeah, this is where we fight the statue, right? Because we fight the... Well, there's two statues.
Yeah, the pyramid statue, and then there's the Aegis statue.
Turns the spinning things to life, and then there's the Aegis statue, the statue in town that also comes to life. Two statues. I mean, what are you going to expect from this kind of game, right? Or this kind of zone?
Yep.
Excellent, fun fight.
Fun fight. Also, like, at this point, comfortably not too difficult. Like, you know, like, beat my first try. Just, like, dodge the attacks, keep dealing damage. Dodge the attacks, okay. Keep dealing damage.
Yeah. Did you save here and stop, or did you talk back to Horus and
No. I went into the next area, yeah. So I beat the next boss as well.
Oh, you beat the sewers, too?
Yes.
Man, the sewers are fucking... I always get lost there.
It's our first
teleport maze of this game.
That was like a good like 25 minutes just wandering around, like trying to like orient myself.
Yeah. There's a lot of darkness in that too. That's sort of it's darkness in the teleport maze. You fight the squid and you got pulled up.
Yep. And now I'm somewhere else.
Now we're somewhere else. That's what we're gonna talk about next week, where we're somewhere else. And your dog gets pulled up too. and somehow in the transition, your dog has, instead of being a... Did we even say what this dog was? The dog, we said it looked like the statue, but the dog was a greyhound, right, at this point.
Yeah.
And now he's a poodle!
It's so good to feel.
I'm like, what the fuck? Why is this dog keep doing this? It has yet to provide an answer. But the mystery continues. The secret of Evermore has yet to be uncovered, and we are going to explore this new zone called Gothica next episode.
Pokemon.
Yes, that's Gothic Queen.
Yeah, Gothita, Gothitelle, and Gothikel.
Gothica. Okay, I'm done. I'm done with this bit. I give up. Is there anything else you want to say regarding your overall feelings for Secret of Evermore after this sort of second chapter of the game before we close out?
Nope, I'm enjoying it.
Awesome. I'm glad you're enjoying it. And I hope you guys are enjoying listening to us talking about it and enjoying playing it. If you are, of course, there will be a Charlian forum thread in the Discord soon. So we could talk about it even if you tried it and didn't like it, or you've heard about it, or whatever the heck you want to talk about with this game with us, we would be happy to include you in on the conversation. And you can join that Discord by going to the link in the description, checking the link pop out there. There are all our socials, including our Discord, where we also had a poll for our next game. Next week, we're playing Nancy Drew, The Silent Spy.
Yeah.
A point-and-click adventure game that hopefully we enjoy a bit more, because it's high camp instead of just grading.
Yeah. No, here's the thing. I don't actually know how good those games are, but I am 100% confident that they are entertaining.
Yes, me too. So I'm looking forward to getting my feet wet with Miss Drew. Something about that is upsetting, and I don't know why, but it is. And
it's fine. It's like you're a teenager going to the beach, you know, like teenagers do.
That's 100% what's happening here. So, I
hope we get to meet Ned.
Ned? Is that Nancy's
boyfriend.
Second cousin? Oh. Wow. I went somewhere else with that. Well, then that's going to do it for this episode of Storm Buds. Again, thank you all so much for listening, sharing, rating, whatever, engaging with us. We really appreciate your presence. And until the next episode, I have been your host of Light, Jerome Barbatsis, and I was joined by my co-host of Light, Alexander Hambrock. Take us out of this episode. Oh, no. The world is destroyed because I woke up.
Oh, that's a direction, too. I was imitating a jet.
Oh. Yeah, no.
Ah!